BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, it's 751 days since Russia began its full-scale invasion of Ukraine.
Now is the time for making decisions. I will be running for the post of President of the Russian Federation.
That was President Putin announcing his plan to stand in this election. That was back in December. And as we record this episode, millions of Russians are heading to the polls. And guess what? Who is on course to remain in power? It's Vladimir Putin. Is it not, Vitaly?
It is. I think it'll take an absolute miracle for him not to win.
There are no such things as miracles. You do know that, don't you?
Not in Russia. It's a very carefully stage-managed exercise. There's very little that's left to chance. Polls open today. And for the first time ever, they are taking place over 3 days, finishing on Sunday night. However, in remote parts of Russia and in occupied parts of Ukraine, people have already been voting. They started to vote back on the 25th of February. And it's reasonable to assume this is to increase turnout because it matters to the Kremlin, because it's a way of validating and legitimising Vladimir Putin's continued rule.
And if he wins, he'll be in charge for another 6 years. How many years has he already been in charge?
Since the year 2000, really. Okay. There was an interruption when somebody else was president, but he didn't really matter, that person. Vladimir Putin was in charge
and
all the time.
And then he can be re-elected again in 2030, can't he? So that would be a sixth term, which means he could be in power until 2036, when he'll be 83.
Yes, which reminds me of how things were in the Soviet Union, at least in certain times during the Soviet era.
But it makes me wonder, does that mean that the war in Ukraine is going to be going on till at least then, 2036?
Unless somebody's defeated. But what I'm saying is that there's a certain type of Russian/Soviet leader who's in charge as long as they're alive.
Yeah. And that's what he wants, because it's all about his legacy. Are people forced to vote in Russia?
Not with a gun to their head in most cases, but there's a certain pressure. The way it's presented on television, for example, it's said to be an honour and a duty. This is what you have to do. And in occupied parts of Ukraine, yes, people don't even have to go to polling stations. Instead, ballot boxes come to them, sometimes accompanied with a man with a gun.
Oh, that does not sound like a free or fair election.
There's very little free or fair about this.
Any independent monitoring?
Not in the true sense of the word.
Yeah.
Vladimir Putin is meant to win.
So we'll obviously be looking into all of this and more on today's episode. We've got loads of questions from you, from wherever you are around the world, so thank you for those. And we've got incredible people to try and answer some of your questions.
This is Ukrainecast.
Ukrainecast from BBC News.
Ukraine is an epicenter of unbearable heartache and pain.
Millions of people are without heating, without water.
Putin is the aggressor.
He will be ready to use nuclear weapons.
They killed him and fled.
I do not know how we managed to survive.
I want people to know the truth.
Hello, this is Victoria Derbyshire in the Ukrainecast studio.
And this is Vitaly Shevchenko, also in the Ukrainecast studio.
And we've got a couple of guests for you. Valerie Hopkins, international correspondent for the New York Times. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for being with us, covering Russia and Ukraine, usually based in Moscow, currently in Berlin.
And sitting right next to me on the Ukrainecast sofa is Francis Carr, my friend and colleague from the Russian team of BBC Monitoring.
Hi there, great to be here.
Hi, Francis. Now, you've done a fantastic thread on X today of some of the wacky and bizarre things that are going on at polling stations across Russia. Let's have a chat through some of them.
Okay.
My favourite is the couple who got married and then went to vote straight after. Literally, the bride is still in her sparkly, huge, princess-like white wedding dress.
She is. So one of the things I like to do when there's an election going on in Russia is to look at the social media coming out of the regions around the country. And you come across all kinds of antics, people in costumes going to vote, concerts and performances. And in this video, which is in Yakutia, in the far east of Russia, in northeastern Siberia, as you say, the bride and groom have literally come from the registry office. The groom hands her passport so she can then pass it on to the election officials, and they're all standing there applauding as she casts her vote. That is just one of many things we're seeing coming out on social media today, and I expect will be coming out over the next 3 days. Russians are being told via the state media that it's their civic duty to come and vote. And whilst this is being framed as some kind of democratic exercise, I don't think many of the people, if any of them, are going there to vote and thinking that they have any kind of influence on who's in power. That's not really what this is about at all. It's about legitimizing the current authorities and the one man who matters in the Kremlin, Vladimir Putin.
Looking at different polling stations from your thread, Francis, mum dressed up as Barbie. She's wearing a sort of pink and white Czech 50s style dress, nipped in at the waist with a big skirt, and her little girl is also dressed in pink. So it's Barbie and her daughter. And then there's a cardboard cutout of Tucker Carlson. Voters can have their picture taken alongside that in another polling station. Obviously, he went to Moscow recently to do that. I'm not going to say interview, to have that conversation with President Putin.
Or sit and listen to him.
And before we get into our listeners' questions, where we're going to hear from Valerie, obviously, we had President Putin's anti-war challenger, Boris Nadezhdin, on our podcast a few weeks ago. Here's what he had to say about being barred from standing.
Unfortunately, we have no free and fair elections. But anyway, we have elections. Only due to the fact that we have elections, many, many people in Russia received the opportunity to support me. And this was the very big meeting against the special military operation. Hundreds of thousands of people all over the Russia, many, many cities, stand in long lines in order to support the candidate, which was for peace. I am absolutely sure that Putin will not be the president of Russia for 6 years. He will see that he has no more great support of people in Russia. Now he really believes that he has about 80% support in Russia. Really, less and less people support him, really.
I don't know about you, Valerie, but I'm sorely tempted to use quote marks around the word election and election procedure in Russia.
Absolutely. And certainly we've seen key figures from the Russian opposition coming out and making a big effort to lean on the international community to not recognize the results of this election. We had Mikhail Khodorkovsky. We also had Alexei Navalny's widow, Yulia Navalna, writing an op-ed in the Washington Post yesterday, calling on Western governments to see this as illegitimate, similar to the way that the international community treated the elections in Belarus in 2020.
Bearing all that in mind, we've got this question from Confused Katie on Discord. Given Putin's penchant for striking out any real opposition from the ballot, who else is on there? And are they real opposition or just stooges?
The only candidates that have been allowed are from what is called in political science circles the systemic opposition. So they are nominally parties that, you know, look different from the United Russia Party, the predominant party. But they really, when it comes down to all of the core essential policy items, they vote alongside the Kremlin. So, you know, we have a 75-year-old communist running, Nikolai Kharitonov, and we have a young 40-year-old candidate, Mr. Devenkov, from a party called New People. It's a relatively new party that was created in 2020. I think it's designed to appeal to younger people and also to split some of the opposition. And we can see that the opposition, you know, is indeed split about whether to spoil their ballots, vote for Devenkov, or simply vote for anyone that's not Putin. And I failed to mention the other candidate, Leonid Slutsky, who's from the so-called Liberal Progressive Party. And I mean, this is a candidate who had a number of journalists before the war coming out and accusing him of sexual harassment. So this is far from a liberal or progressive party.
It's extremely right-wing nationalist, isn't it?
Indeed.
Okay, right, let's have a listen to this voice note from Ian.
Hi, Ukrainecast. What happens to those who vote against Putin? Are they tracked down and educated?
Well, technically, the actual process of voting in Russia is similar to in a democracy. So you go to a polling station and there's a booth where you can cast your vote and then anonymously place it into a box. Mm-hmm. So the authorities technically don't have any way of finding out which way you voted. That said, we've seen reports from occupied Ukraine, from what Russia calls its new territories, its new regions, where pro-Russian locals are coming to people's homes with an armed soldier. And I think it's very unlikely that you're going to, when someone is standing right next to you with a gun, that you're going to vote for someone else.
Yeah, here's a ballot box, vote. I think the pressure is on people to vote.
Right.
Because all the candidates are safe. If you vote, I may be wrong, if you vote, that's fine. That's all we need you to know.
Okay. Do you agree with that, Valerie?
We all know what the result of the election is going to be. So what the government really wants now is to see a very high turnout. And I think that is, you know, one of the reasons for all of this pageantry that we're seeing at the ballot boxes. I also think that the turnout is really important because, you know, this is widely seen as a referendum, not only on Mr. Putin himself, but on the war that he's been waging in Ukraine. 29 Russian regions have also rolled out electronic voting. That is a place where you can send a screenshot to prove that you've submitted your vote. Certainly, there are many reports that people are checking up to make sure that you did vote. This is a three-day voting exercise. So the government really wants everyone to get out on the first and second days, while the opposition has really focused on the third day. And the opposition has called on everybody who doesn't want to see Putin in power for another 6 years to come to their polling station at noon local time. And yesterday, the Moscow prosecutor's office, at least, reminded people that if they did that, this would be seen as taking part in an unsanctioned gathering and that people could be held liable for obstructing the voting process, which carries a possible prison sentence of up to 5 years.
Wow.
And on the issue of turnout, we have a question from an online user calling themselves Handle with Claire. They seem to be very concerned about turnout and getting that percentage up. I understand wanting to make it seem legitimate, but if they rig the results anyway, why not just lie about the turnout too? What do you think, Francis?
I think in many ways the Kremlin is very concerned about the appearance of this election and I mean, also the appearance of generally having a kind of legitimate democratic government. It continues to talk about human rights and it continues to talk about democratic norms on the international stage, whether you look at Russia's representative at the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, or the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. And I think internally, people have spoken about this being a kind of referendum on the war. And Vladimir Putin has, on a number of occasions, made this point that the vast majority of Russians support him. And just recently in his State of the Nation speech, he said that an absolute majority, quote unquote, of Russians supported his decision to launch the so-called special military operation. And just days ago, he was saying that the unity of the Russian people, the consolidation of the Russian people, was the country's main weapon. And it's really important for him to get this sense of consolidation.
And then also, the official symbol of the election is the V sign associated with his special military operation. The official slogan of the election is vote for Russia. And if you happen to be in occupied parts of Ukraine, there's only one way of seeing it, vote for Russia.
Putin has, over his time as president, has tried to conflate the idea of him and Russia as a country to impose the sense on people that they are the same thing and that if they're voting for him, they're voting for national pride and national unity.
Okay, let's have a listen to Gray from Northern Arizona in the US.
Hello, Ukrainecast. My question is Vladimir Putin grooming anyone to be his successor?
The answer is no, absolutely not. This is not something that authoritarian leaders like doing. As Francis said, in Putin's mind, Russia is him and there's nobody else.
None of the Russia analysts or watchers have any consensus on who that would be. He's amended the constitution so that he could potentially stay in power until 2036. So I don't think that he's going to be looking anytime soon for a possible successor.
Another thing I think that's worth mentioning is that Putin is now over 70 years old. Mm-hmm. And this is one reason why his health remains one of the most closely guarded secrets in Russia. Anytime he disappears from the public view, questions are asked, but we never get any kind of answers. And there's even reports in the past of the Kremlin doing sort of pre-recorded engagements that they can then wheel out onto TV so that if he is away for, say, a week or 10 days, they have things to put on into the media to suggest that he's still active.
Stalin obviously saw himself as Mr. Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And when he died, the outpouring of grief was such that, well, people apparently thought this is the end of Soviet Union, this is the end of us. About 1,500 people died in a stampede at his funeral because people saw this as the end of the world as they knew it. So this is what modern Russia is coming to, I think.
Let's have a listen to this. And it's a question from one of our listeners about the psychology behind President Putin.
Hi, Ukrainecast team. This is Hazel from Redditch. We all know that he's going to win. He knows he's going to win. It's obviously rigged. But the comment was made that he would feel emboldened and empowered by winning. Why is that? How can he be such a fool to himself?
Thank you, Hazel. What do you say, Valerie?
I mean, I still think it's very important to him to feel and to project that he has the support of the Russian people. I mean, this is has a long history in Russia, this process of acclamation. You know, they want to send a message to anyone who opposes them or who opposes the war that they are a tiny and insignificant group of people, that they are powerless, and that try as they might, risk prison as they might, or even worse, nothing will come of their efforts. And I do think that that's a big part of the psychology of modern Russia as well.
Isn't it also about his ego? He needs the validation of the people, doesn't he?
I think so. And he's grown to see himself as this father figure, this kind of, you know, like the czars in the past. Mm. You see in his annual press conference, his annual Q&A sessions, where ordinary people are asking him to solve these really local issues, like the closure of their school or potholes in their town. And these are not things that should be solved by the president of a country with 140 million people. But he has this idea in his head that he is the only person who can get through to these ordinary people when they're having trouble with the local authorities who won't listen to them. I think the reporting that's come out since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, suggesting that Putin spent a lot of time during the COVID pandemic buried in history books and began to see himself sort of akin to people like Peter the Great and Catherine the Great about leaving this national legacy for his country. And he sees himself very much associated with the people in his country, not purely as a kind of elected political official.
Let's now go on to Discord, where a user calling themselves Mr. Q said, how much does the influence of Putin affect the identity of the people of Russia? And why do so many people agree with him?
Putin has worked very, very hard to present himself as the savior for all of Russia's struggles. You know, I was recently in Samara, the ninth largest city in Russia, and as soon as I landed at the airport, I got into a taxi driven by a woman working her second job. And the first thing she said was, you know, all of our men are gone. Everyone is at the war. And while we might expect that people are blaming Putin for this, she immediately blamed Joe Biden. And she said, you know, Putin is the only one that can save us from this. Because in the 90s, you know, I didn't have money to buy shoes for my daughter. I couldn't feed my family. And Putin saved us, and he'll save us again. I cannot overstate the fact that people in Russia may have very different perceptions of why this war started, but almost everyone I've met, aside from, I don't know, 10% or even less of really intensive pro-war people, really want this to end. You know, Putin has cast himself as the only person who can end it and has acted on fears of what might happen if Russia loses. I mean, everybody wants it to end, but many of them do want this to end in some semblance of a Russian victory because they fear, I don't know, some, you know, Western occupation, reparations, devastation of their economy, etc. That's not to say that that's what's going to happen, but I think that the Kremlin has worked hard to instill a lot of fear in people about the possible outcome.
And Francis, finally, Aaron emailed to ask, by what percentage will President Putin win his election and how long will it take to count the votes and discover the results?
Okay, so we actually do have some figures that have come from sources in the Kremlin that have spoken anonymously to Russian media. Mm-hmm. And what they are saying is that turnout should be about 70% or just over, and that Putin should get about 80% or just over. And regional officials have actually been told to sort of secure this vote. The thinking being that last time around, he got just under 80% of the vote. And so this time it has to be higher to sort of
show. How do you secure it?
Well, they have a whole toolkit of methods. So going from not allowing people onto the ballot who they think might garner some genuine level of support, right through to the odd bit of ballot stuffing on the day. In terms of when we can expect the results to come out, if we look at 2018, which was the last time a presidential election took place, by the sort of late into the night on the Sunday, that time it was a one-day vote. About 50% of votes had been counted late in the evening, around 11 p.m., midnight, Moscow time, and when Putin came out onto Red Square to address a rally and thank people for their support. And by the next morning, about 11 a.m. Moscow time, the head of the Central Electoral Commission said that Putin had won with almost 100% of votes counted. This time, of course, there's more electronic voting, or there is electronic voting happening, which might speed up the vote counting process. But I mean, there's no point in sitting on the edge of your seat for this one, because
you're not going to be staying up all night waiting to hear who won.
No, it's not quite like the general election in the UK, which when that happens, I imagine lots of people will be staying up through the night to see the results coming in from various constituencies. In Russia, I don't think we're going to be on tenterhooks in the same way.
I think we've made that pretty clear in this episode.
But actually, I shall be staying up in a way, because we're doing a Ukrainecast special on Sunday night, where I'll be joined by our colleague Lise Doucette and our Russia editor Steve Rosenberg to look at the results of this election. So do join us then.
Absolutely. And our sister podcast, The Global Story, is also closely following the Russian election. So if you want to hear more international stories, just search up The Global Story on BBC Sounds. Francis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Valerie, thank you so much. Really appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks to you both.
We're so grateful for all the questions that you've asked about the Russian elections and generally for your messages, so please do keep sending them. Yeah, and I really hope that you've found this episode enlightening and useful and informative, as always.
Please do contact us on WhatsApp, Telegram, Discord or Signal. Our number is +44 330 123 9480. And the email address is ukrainecast@bbc.co.uk. And please also subscribe to the podcast on BBC Sounds, because it helps others to find us.
And wherever you are listening in the world, take care.
Goodbye.
Ukrainecast from BBC News.